be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight.
This is the NFL Podcast Midweek Report, and of course, loyal listeners, we don't have a name for it, so we're going to put a little poll up there, allow you to weigh in on what you think this should be called. Always value your input. The man's voice you're about to hear, Payne Insider, I'm your host, Todd Furman, and fortunately, Payne, for everybody listening to this podcast, we're going to talk about actual games being played in the NFL this weekend, none of that Ray Rice stuff, the off-the-field nonsense that gets in the way of picking winners.
Thank God. Let's get down to business. Big game, Pittsburgh-Baltimore Thursday night to get the weekend started, and I think there's going to be this is going to be one of those games with a dichotomy that's very split. We have public on the Pittsburgh. I think sharp money is going to land on Baltimore at some point, so it'll be an interesting Thursday night game.
How do you factor in some of the off-field stuff going on for Baltimore? We knew Rice wasn't going to play anyways, was still suspended for this game. But how does that typically impact the locker room? And do you do anything differently when you're handicapping this one? As you alluded to, this number has ping-ponged from 3 to 2.5 to 3. And I echo those same sentiments as you really believe this number will settle on 3 when we get to kickoff.
Yeah, I think it depends on the organization. I think Ozzie Newsome's great. I think it's a sound foundation for an organization, so I don't think they'll have issues. I think sometimes the game itself kind of just lets you go out there and play and mentally takes away all the other things going on in the locker room. So I think this is a good thing, the early week, the short week. I think they have a lot of advantages here. Obviously, this is a must-win game for Baltimore. Cannot drop two conference games, two home games. So this is, I wouldn't say their season, but it's damn near close to it.
And one other question, I don't want to spend too much time on this with so many other games on the board to try and get to. What do we make of this total? Open 43.5, out to 44.5. We've seen in the past short weeks, divisional games, very hotly contested, you know, matchups between a lot of these teams that have that level of familiarity. Is this more a byproduct of these two teams being more offensively built headed into the 2014 season than they are on the defensive side?
Well, I think it's 2014, so not only are you adapting to new rules, new systems, typically we would have looked for this short week, familiar opponents, and we would have looked under condensed game plans. But the way these two teams play now, both no-huddle offenses, both defenses, shells of what they once were. You talk about a Pittsburgh team last week on the field defensively in the second half for over 40 plays. I think that lends itself to Baltimore. They ran over 80 plays last week. Pittsburgh could be tired late in this game, and I think, you know, the professionals are probably right getting out ahead in this game and going over 43.5.
No real argument for me there. I think the big injury to keep your eye on, Ladarius Webb, by all accounts earlier today when we're recording, looks like he should be good to go, so probably figure that Antonio Brown's catches will be limited. Expect Marcus Wheaton to be the go-to receiver for this Steelers team. But better games on the board, in my opinion, as we look at the Sunday slate. I mean, hard to try and take too much away from just one week's worth of performances, but I want to start on one of the late games that probably wouldn't be getting a ton of attention, but it is from bettors. Arguably the biggest move we've seen so far this week. Denver opened as a 12-point favorite. Number got as high as 13.5, and when it reached the peak, you saw a ton of support come in for Kansas City as that number's down to 10.5 at some shops offshore.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a game we talked about earlier in the Monday podcast. Got as high as 13.5. And then we saw resistance, obviously, in the market today, down to 10.5, as you alluded to. Kansas City, obviously, this is a division game. It's just a ton of points. You get your groups out there who used to just take double digits blind, but now you get the look-ahead factor for Denver. Take a trip out to Seattle next week. Obviously, revenge on their minds. You get Dwayne Bowe back. I think you get a healthy dose of Jamal Charles this week. 13.5 is just an absolute ton in a division game. And when you looked at this look-ahead line, some places had it as low as Denver minus 7. The LVH opened with their look-ahead line at minus 10. So I just think a massive overreaction based upon how poor Kansas City looked last week. And professionals definitely came in today, no doubt about who it was, and took the 13.5.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to try and see Denver next week. Clearly, they've had the game circled on their schedule against Seattle. They didn't really have much trouble last year against Kansas City. And as you alluded to, the Chiefs can't be any worse than they were a week ago against the Titans. Expect them to try and bring their A game. And I guess one of the other games that's attracted quite a bit of attention from the professionals and a huge dichotomy starting to emerge in the market between the pros and the Joes. Look at Minnesota, 3-point underdog. I know we touched on this game a little bit earlier on Monday's edition, but New England right now is soft 3. Will we see a 2.5 in the market as we get closer to Sunday's game?
You know, it looks like it's trending that way, but I don't know if the books can hold out long enough and get to the weekend. Obviously, they're going to get balanced at that point. But right now, it looks like it's headed that way. It's going to take another massive move. It's going to take a massive bet. It's going to take a lot of money to get it down to 2.5 because I think the last thing the books are going to want is to go to 3 on this game. And Sunday, regardless of who's on this game, the public is just going to be out in droves betting New England.
A better question, I guess, to kind of use that as a building block. When you look at numbers, and you obviously analyze the market quite a bit, we both do, and we go through our handicapping, anticipate where the number is going to move. How much stock do you put in a price that goes through the 3 without resistance? The two games that jump out last week, we saw Minnesota get bet down from 3.5-4. Number closes 2.5, and then we saw something similar on Monday night with the Chargers and Cardinals game. Very little resistance. That number got to 2.5. Now, in that game, though, I should add, it did get back to 3, a soft 3 at that before kickoff. Is that a strong market indicator that it's really not going to matter what number you take in that particular game?
I mean, I think so. I mean, obviously, you know, you kind of want to practice getting the best of the number. But early in the season, I think the market's at its weakest point. I think sharp bettors are definitely ahead of everybody else, even sports books. So they're just looking to get down as much money as humanly possible on a side, whether it's through the money line, whether it's through the spread, whether it's through teasers. They're trying to get down the most money possible on these sides. And when you see a game like that blow through the 3, it's a good indication the number is just not going to matter.
And I guess when you look at, you know, some of those games where the number doesn't matter, of course, a couple of games where the number will definitely come into play, and I'll call these 3 home underdogs arguably the 3 ugliest ducklings on the board. Talk about the Giants catching 3 now from Arizona on the look-ahead. They were a 1.5-point favorite when this number opened before we saw Monday night. Looking at Cleveland, a 6.5-point home underdog against New Orleans. And then the Chargers, a team with a little bit more fight, catching 5.5, even some 6s, depending on where you look, at home against Seattle. Any strong feelings on any of those 3 teams potentially being live, knowing those are the sides the books will need going for them come Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, I think you definitely think a couple of these games will be live. You've got Arizona, short week, traveling across the country. The Giants are just absolutely a dumpster fire on offense, so that's what I think most people are looking at here. It was on national TV. They were just very, very bad. Detroit does not have a secondary. Eli Manning was just not able to capitalize at all. But at 3, I mean, at some point, I think you're going to see resistance there come game day. And obviously, when you talk about the New Orleans contest, just a different team away from home and specifically away from that turf. This is going to be, I think, a tough game, and I think you will see definitely professional money once this reaches 7. And then when you go out west, Seattle, San Diego, not a long trip for Seattle, extra time for Seattle. So that's kind of what's keeping me off this game. It'll be interesting to see how high this gets. And again, I don't think this one gets to 7, but if it was, you would definitely see professional money on San Diego.
You mentioned the Cleveland game. Do we think that game's going to get to 7? I see right now as I look at the screen, there are a couple of the square books out there booking to more recreational players already there. Do we think books are going to be forced to go to 7, knowing that they're going to see a ton of support from the professionals on the dog for just those reasons you alluded to? New Orleans playing their second road game in as many weeks. The change of surface means this is a very different team. And you don't have to go back that far to see a very similar spot a year ago when the Jets went out there and absolutely dominated a better New Orleans team. I should say the Jets were a better team than Cleveland and absolutely dominated them.
Yeah, I think you'll see a soft 7 at some point in this game on Sunday. It'll be interesting to see how much love the sharp guys give Cleveland this week. Everyone will be waiting around for that 7, but I think it'll be whoever gets to it first, those will disappear quickly. So I think you'll see a soft 7. And if it doesn't, it's a very, very, very good indication that the sharp guys love Cleveland if they're taking 6.5.
Yeah, I'm interested to see that. I guess the other game where I'm real curious to see where it goes is Sunday nighter when we look at the Bears and 49ers. Of course, the big injury concern there, Alshon Jeffrey, how healthy will that hamstring be? I know we didn't talk about these two teams earlier this week, but what are your initial thoughts on San Francisco? I mean, I watched them against Dallas. for the better part of, let's call it, three quarters, was not impressed. And I think, you know, when you and I traded some of our notes, we saw an aging defense before our very eyes that may not match up well with the Bears' offense. Then again, the great equalizer for Chicago was always Jay Cutler, oftentimes the other team's best player.
Yeah, I mean, we saw San Francisco. I thought they looked old on defense. They get a defensive score. That game was much closer than the score indicated, in my opinion. Romo throws a pick in the end zone. For me, Chicago, it was Jay Cutler. I mean, they battled back in the second half. I thought they really dominated by the box score, a Bills team. So I think Chicago is going to be awfully live Sunday night. This is one of those games where it's the primetime game. You definitely don't want to be on the public side, and sometimes in those contests. For me, though, with the late start, I know it's a central time zone team traveling west. I would be more inclined to look in the first half if you can get a 4 or 4.5. But I think Chicago's live here, especially if Alshon Jeffrey is healthy.
Yeah, I think the Bears' defense obviously becomes the big concern. Not sure exactly what we're going to get there. Can't imagine San Francisco will have the same success Buffalo did, running for, you know, nearly 200 yards in that game, keeping the Bears' high-powered offense on the sidelines, unable to really develop some continuity. One of the games for me, Payne, that jumps off, and I'm curious to get your opinion on it because I know it's a team right in your backyard, Miami and Buffalo. This game, we saw the number open, Buffalo -1, swung to Miami as a 1.5-point favorite. Kind of the peak there, and since that point, the number has come back, even seeing Buffalo -1 at one of the sharper offshore books.
Not a game I want anything to do with this week. I know people are very high in Miami, especially after last week. I think it might be a week too late. This is a Miami team that traditionally struggles against Buffalo, struggles upstate New York. They are without three starting linebackers. They potentially are without Randy Starks, one of their key defensive linemen, with a cast on his foot. So for me, this is a tough matchup. Buffalo is just so physical. But that being said, everything that I'm reading, if you're looking for a massive letdown from Miami, I don't think it happens. They've kind of taken the us-against-the-world approach. They've talked about last week not meaning a damn thing and that they're poised to push ahead. But for me, this feels like a genuine coin flip game. We have seen some sharp money on the under, and that's probably the better way to look.
Now, nice little segue there as you talk about, you know, overreactions and trying to figure out exactly how some of these teams will respond. Detroit, Carolina, and this will lead us to a bigger point, but let's address this game first before we go in the direction I was looking ahead. Carolina, a 2.5-point favorite, overwhelming public support for the Lions in this spot. On the road, for an underdog. Automatic cause for concern given the short week, and apparently Cam Newton will be back under center for these Panthers on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, this line just keeps continuing to trend downwards. You're looking at even a -2 at Cantor right now. And if Cam's in there and the line suggests that he will be, for me it would be Carolina or nothing. I just think short week, public is all over Detroit. Knee-jerk reaction on what they saw last. I think Carolina matches up fairly well here, and that would be the only way I could look. I definitely could not go to the window with a Detroit ticket this week.
Yeah, and it's real interesting. You watch this game. Every time it gets to 3, it seems to be some money on the dog. I imagine that's books. Not wanting to try and create too much exposure that early, for me, I think the best angle to probably take here is 43.5 and then to go under. Really don't see either of these teams doing a whole lot. I think Detroit's secondary won't have to be tested against the Carolina team that really only has one weapon in Kelvin Benjamin. Be interested to see how Cam Newton and him kind of mesh on the big stage. We saw him during preseason have a ton of success. But that, I guess that, like I said, that leads me to a bigger question regarding injuries. Last week we saw Carolina and Tampa. You saw Tampa move to 1.5 despite opening a 2-point dog, and that was assuming Cam was in the lineup. Then on game day, that number balloons as 5, 5.5. How do you go about it? And more importantly, how should some of the casual bettors just, you know, familiarizing themselves with the NFL markets, go about it properly evaluating injuries, especially to marquee personnel like quarterbacks? Obviously, last year we saw the Packers. Oddsmakers didn't do enough. They were terrible. But did they overreact to Cam Newton, and is it just a question of one individual player, or is it something we're going to see throughout the course of the regular season?
You know, I think when you talk about that game specifically, it was interesting to see because you have the math guys who were taking 3. They said, you know, this is the best we're going to get. This is what we're taking. But then you had people, the other groups, the ones that really, really matter with the sharpest information, and they knew from the onset that Cam wasn't going to be playing. So they were trying to get down as much money as humanly possible on the side. And when you can beat the 3, when you can grab even 2.5, a late 2.5, and it closes 5.5, you know, that's a game you're going to win a majority of the time. And moving forward, when you talk about, you know, evaluating players, whether it's injuries or suspensions, I think obviously quarterback, the number one key position, is the player elite? Okay, so that's the key to gauging this. Is the player elite? And I think a lot of people, when it comes to quarterback, have a tough time gauging that. You see a guy like Jay Cutler make $100 million, and they think he's elite. I don't think that's the case. The next key thing is the scheme. Is it a system? Is it a Chip Kelly-type offense? Is it a Mad Canadian-type offense there with the Chicago Bears? You have to look at the backup as well. Is he acclimated to the system? Has he been there a few years? Is he a guy that started previously in the NFL? And then I think the last thing when you try to gauge this is the opponent factor. You know, one thing that I'll look at, and we can reference the Philadelphia Eagles again, they're without two offensive linemen this week. Now, if they were traveling to Seattle with that defensive line, with that crowd, I think it would be a bigger difference than going to Indianapolis where they're struggling with their pass rush right now.
Wait, so you're not calling the Colts crowd an extremely fervent fan base on Monday night that they're not going to be able to create an electric atmosphere there at Lucas Oil Stadium, Payne?
I don't like their defensive line, so that was kind of the direction I was going more toward. I'm not going to tip my hand on the Monday night game yet, but, you know, that's one of those things if the matchup also. So I think it's, you got to factor in everything. I mean, you nailed it. Last year, most people thought Aaron Rodgers might be initially worth anywhere from 6 to 7.5 points, and we quickly found out he might be worth 10, maybe even 11 points. So it just depends. Obviously, Cam Newton with that offensive system where it's predicated on the run game, where it's predicated on a great offensive line, he's not worth that much to the line.
Okay, so if we're talking about guys and what they're worth, then as far as valuation is concerned, safe to say that Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, and Drew Brees are the three most valuable guys, and are we talking about them, you know, 8.5 and 9 points, maybe even 10 based on the opponent?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say, especially Aaron Rodgers. Drew Brees, obviously I think this is a guy that's trending downwards just a little bit, losing some zip on the ball, so he wouldn't be as much as Aaron Rodgers in my book. I think the same thing, Tom Brady getting a little older than usual. I think you downgrade him just a little bit. But that's the biggest position. Obviously, when you're talking about other skill set positions, you might be talking a half point. You might be talking a point. And I think one of, you know, a good lead in here is the potential return of Josh Gordon as a skill player. When you look at the Browns overall, they have absolutely nobody to throw to. And so right now on our evaluation sheet, he might be the most valuable skill position player in the NFL right now.
That's pretty impressive when you think about it, because I think for most people out there, it's name recognition, and that's what they're looking for. They figure the Calvin Johnsons of the world, you know, just because of what he means to his team, he's going to be the most valuable, which for Calvin, probably not the best indication because he is one of the best. But to hear that Josh Gordon may actually be worth the most to his team, given the drop-off from, you know, being the top wide receiver to secondary option, really changes the perception. You know, I'd probably use this as an opportunity to talk about what I would do from Brian Hoyer to Johnny Manziel, but given how well I've been received by all Texas A&M fans calling them the most overrated college football team in the country this week, I'm not sure I want to really go after that fan base on multiple fronts on the pro and college side. One last game, though, before you know, we try and transition away. Atlanta-Cincinnati. This game sits at 5. Big-time support for the dog in this particular contest. And more importantly, a game in no man's land. You know, not a 4, not a 6, but sits there at 5. What does the number tell you about this one?
I think this is lay it or don't play it. I think that's exactly what that line says to me. I think when you're always kind of in that 4.5, 5 range, you know, it kind of signals to me and just basically ABC when you've been taught from a lot of the sharp groups is, you know, this is definitely a kind of a lay it or don't play it situation. I think the total definitely, you know, you probably look towards the over in this situation. Atlanta, obviously, their offense is top-notch. It's elite. We've talked about it a season ago. Despite no Julio Jones, despite offensive line issues, this was a team ranked 8th in offensive efficiency, and they faced the toughest defensive schedule in all of the NFL. So they bring back all their weapons. The offensive line now is the issue, and I think that's where this game is won. Cincinnati's defensive line just loaded, and you know, you lose potentially Jake Matthews, who already had to switch from right tackle to left tackle, so now you're down 2 guys. That's going to be where this game's decided.
And you make a compelling case for Atlanta, but it should go and be noted that Atlanta, under their win total, was actually one of the stronger positions that the sharp guys took this offseason. So it'll be fascinating to try and see, and we did see some sharp money last week on New Orleans. I know you have your crystal ball in front of you, as you're so good at doing. In terms of games, if people are looking at the games when they listen to this on Thursday or Friday versus Sunday, are there certain sides you think they should move on early where the number is going to go against them, or potential spots? I know we talked about some of those home underdogs and maybe waiting those out, trying to get the best number. But is there a game here that you think you should move on now versus waiting until you get closer to kickoff on Sunday?
When you look at this board, I think we're going to see, and it'll be an interesting one. I wasn't overly impressed with Houston. I believe there will be sharp money on Oakland, 3 obviously being the key number. Now, when you look at this, you're garnering about 70% of the action on the Houston Texans side, but I think 3 is your key number. You're obviously no chance of this going to 3.5. So I'd grab the 3 now if you were inclined to bet Oakland rather than wait till Sunday.
I wouldn't argue that in the least. I think you talk about two teams. Fortunately, when we look at the late slate, there are four games to keep us busy. If I can count right, no, it actually looks like 5 games, so we won't have to watch that ghastly affair out there in Northern California between Houston and Oakland. But I would agree that the dog does look alive in that particular spot. I know we touched briefly on the Monday night game, but of course, if people want more in-depth analysis on Philadelphia and Indy, that's what the Monday podcast is for. When we have some of the better information, we can make sense of the weekend we've seen. Payne, any parting shots for our loyal listeners out there before we go back to reading and making sure that we don't leave any stone unturned as we approach week 2 of the NFL season?
I think the biggest thing right now is we need a name for the podcast. We need some input from you guys. I believe Todd mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, we'll have a poll this week. We definitely need a name by the time we start Monday. So interject with your thoughts and opinions, please.
Always appreciated, and that those dulcet to sounds of one Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter, easy enough, at Payne Insider. I know he's more than happy to answer any questions. I'm your host, Todd Furman, co-host, whatever you want to call me, resident idiot. I mean, it doesn't really hurt my feelings. But this has been your Thursday installment of the NFL Pod. Fortunately for us, that name will go away. We'll have something more creative, and we'll be right back with you come Monday as we preview that big game between Philadelphia and Indy and look back on the week that was during the NFL season.